Hello and welcome to the very first episode of the EuroCopa podcast, sponsored by Sling Latino. Starting today, we will be bringing you daily coverage of what is going to be an incredibly fun summer of football and podcasting. From now until Wednesday, we will be previewing the group stages of the Copa Centenario, and soon the games will actually be upon us. And the next question you might have right now is, who is this we I keep referring to? Well, my name is Nipun Chopra, and I will be serving as your host for the next 40-odd daily episodes. And joining me every night will be the brilliant Karthik Krishnayar, as well as a host of other amazing pundits, including Juan Arango, Roberto Rojas, Robert Hay, Morgan Green, and others. But tonight, we are joined by Karthik, my favorites, Chris Henage, and my regular podcasting partner on the ULF podcast, Gabe Smith. Gentlemen, welcome to the EuroCopa podcast.
Great to be here.
Great to be on.
Awesome.
Yeah, so thanks for having us, Ben.
Tonight's focus will be Group A, and we'll focus a little bit more on the U.S. men's national team. We watched a pretty one-sided friendly yesterday, so we'll refer to that as well. So in case you're wondering, the four teams in this group are Costa Rica, Colombia, Paraguay, and the USA. So we'll start with Costa Rica, gentlemen. Now, during the last World Cup, Costa Rica were kind of the team to watch, Chris, and there was in particular, we were kind of focused on a particular player, Joel Campbell, who since then moved to Arsenal. And we were talking just before we started recording that Joel Campbell has had a bit of a patchy season, but when he has played, he's actually done fairly well. So that bodes well for Costa Rica, but overall, probably outsiders for qualification.
Yes, I think that would be a fair way to categorize it. What you can say is that, again, in the 2 years since the World Cup, it's been a little bit turbulent for Costa Rica. They've changed coach twice now since that tournament. And my concern with them is that if you look at their goal-scoring habits, they're just not the greatest. Joel Campbell certainly has the most pedigree, I would argue, of the strikers on show alongside Brian Ruiz. But even then, you're looking at someone like Marco Arena, who's at FC Midtjylland in Denmark, to try and get you goals when he has a 1-4 record mm-hmm. for his country. That's not really the pedigree of a starting striker. And the fact that they've scored more than one goal only twice in 13 games going into this, it just says to me that if they're going to get through this, they're going to need some inspired form from the likes of Keylor Navas in goal.
Karthik, talk to me about this team. Talk to me what has happened with Costa Rica, because I definitely thought that they would be taking the world stage by storm based on what we saw in that World Cup, the style of football we saw, the movement, some of the flashy play from the likes of Campbell, as we've mentioned, Brian Ruiz. So what's happened in the interim in the last 2 years that has led to kind of a slip in Costa Rican football?
Well, I think it's pretty simple. I think Pinto, who had been brilliant manager for them and actually been critical in their run in 2002 to the World Cup, where they won CONCACAF qualifying, they won the Hex and did well in the World Cup, and then in 2014 and guided them to the quarterfinals. They were unlucky maybe not to be in the semifinals. They were that good in that World Cup. Pinto was undermined by Paulo Wanchope, legendary player for Costa Rica, one of their all-time greatest players, a player we know in the United States because he grew up in the United States before he went off to play in England. Manchester City, Derby County, West Ham. He undermined him, Wanchope. He became the manager, and chaos reigned. They had a very poor Gold Cup. Wanchope was sacked. Oscar Ramirez has come in with this team, and they don't seem to have the spirit or organization or continuity that they had in 2014. And leading up to 2014, they were also very good in qualifying in 2012 and 2013. It wasn't an accident they did so well in the World Cup. We weren't sure how to rate CONCACAF versus the other confederations. Right. But as far as CONCACAF being in the World Cup, Costa Rica being the best CONCACAF country in the World Cup was no surprise because they were that good in qualifying. So it's been management issues. And I don't know if they regain it for this tournament. Quite frankly, I think they are probably the genuine outsiders in this group.
Yeah. Gabe, you talked to me about Keylor Navas. As a goalkeeper, I know you and I have had many conversations about who some of the best goalkeepers in the world are. And it's sort of unfortunate that Keylor Navas was mostly just a negotiation tactic last summer to try to get De Gea to Real Madrid, whereas he's had a brilliant season. He's now a Champions League winning goalkeeper, as Chris mentioned, he's probably going to be one of the key factors in if Costa Rica have to move on to the next stage.
Yeah, I think he's absolutely the key factor for Costa Rica. Has the opportunity to, I think, remove some of the stress from the other players that will be starting. He's that quality. Obviously, a brilliant Champions League campaign that ended with Real Madrid then lifting the trophy. I think, you know, really the when you look at his performance over the course of the season, and as you alluded to, in your introduction there, you know, all the talk was potential of De Gea, who you can argue is one of the top three goalkeepers in the world right now. Him coming over to Real Madrid and that move not taking place. You now have Keylor Navas, who had the entire season to really show why he should be between the sticks, both for obviously club and obviously country. There's no question about that. I think that the biggest credit that you can give to him is I even hear most Real Madrid fans rarely even talk about kind of wanting that move for De Gea for this upcoming summer, just because of how well Keylor Navas has been playing. So I think, you know, Costa Rica does surprise people and find some way to escape out of this group, most likely would even be second place. I think it's going to be 100% because of Keylor Navas there.
So really quick follow-up question to you, Gabe. What about Keylor Navas as a goalkeeper? What is it that sets him apart from so many other goalkeepers? Because when we look at Manuel Neuer, it's his ability to play as the sweeper keeper, whereas De Gea doesn't do that. He's a brilliant shot stopper. He's a very very different goalkeeper. He's a non-traditional goalkeeper because he saves with his feet way more than traditional goalkeepers do, sometimes inexplicably. So what is it about Keylor Navas that sets him apart as a top-level goalkeeper?
It's his reaction time. I think for sure. I mean, you look at it, he's a phenomenal keeper when it comes to penalties. And I think that when you look at the whole entire idea of penalties, it's all reaction time. I actually kind of see some similarities, honestly, with him and De Gea in that non-traditional, you know, type style between both players. So I think there's definitely, you can see some of the similarities there, you know, with De Gea. But Navas as a whole, his reaction time, you know, he's not necessarily going to be known for his distribution. He's not going to be one that's really going to be leading counterattacks there for Costa Rica. But in terms of his presence within the sticks, I honestly don't think that there's really a better keeper in this particular tournament than, again, when it comes to his reaction time saves.
Yeah. So I think we're all in agreement, gentlemen, that Costa Rica will have a difficult time getting out of this group. And we'll talk about the other three teams in a second. But before we do that, before we continue our dissection of Group A, including the U.S. men's national team, let me tell you about how you can watch these games live. I know I've been looking for tickets for the games in Chicago and elsewhere. And the only place I look for these tickets is SeatGeek. It's convenient and prevents all the hassle associated with looking for tickets because they put all the tickets in one place so you save time and never miss a deal. You can even set alerts for upcoming events, and SeatGeek will let you know if ticket prices fall. Even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is ranked based on value, so you can immediately find underpriced seats, and that's pretty cool. And before you buy, you can use SeatGeek's detailed maps to see the view from your seat. And what's really cool, guys, is my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. So this is what you need to do to get your $20 rebate on tickets. Step one, you download the free SeatGeek app. Number two, you go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. And then step three, you enter promo code WSTPOD and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So go ahead, guys, download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code WSTPOD today. Gentlemen, Karthik, I'm going to come to you first with Colombia. We were talking about Costa Rica being having a good showing last World Cup. We have to put Colombia in that same category as well. And they were propelled by a certain James Rodriguez, who was the talk of the town. And since then, he moved to Real Madrid and has kind of struggled a little bit. And he might be looking at this the Copa Centenario as an opportunity to move forward from his club career. And what I guess the real question is, the focus is going to be on him because there's no Falcao in this team. Honestly, not really been missed for a long time. He's been a peripheral figure since the injury before the World Cup. So talk to me about the Colombian squad here.
Yeah, this is a very good team. This is probably one of the favorites in this tournament. One of the things I would point out about Colombia is, though, that they have a number of good, young, under 23 players that I think might have been able to break into this Copa squad, but they're being saved for the Olympics. They qualified for the Olympic tournament. They have a very good team. They actually beat the United States in a playoff, and we were very disappointed about that.
Right.
In this part of the world, because the U.S., at least on paper, had one of our strongest, you know, under 23 teams in years. So I think James Rodriguez is the key. The other key, of course, is Jose Pekerman, their manager, who has just an incredible record both at the club and national team record level. He's one of now many former Argentine national team coaches that have gone on to better and greater things with other South American countries.
Right.
You know, Bielsa comes to mind right away, and what Bielsa did with Chile to transform Chile's style of play. Like Bielsa, Pekerman was blamed for leaving Lionel Messi or hauling Lionel Messi off against Germany, and really kind of had a difficult departure from that Argentina job after the 2006 World Cup. He went managed Mexico at the club level for a little bit and did very, very well there, and then has now really kind of kickstarted Colombia since he left Tigres and took that job. And he has brought Colombia to a level where they haven't been before. There was a period of time between 1990 and 1998 where Colombia had a lot of good players and obviously had that famous 5-0 or 5-1 win over Argentina. I think it was 5-0 in 1993, but never quite hit the heights that I think they're hitting right now. The World Cup in 2014, and now potentially this tournament. They're one of the favorites to win this tournament. James is the key guy. I think Cuadrado is in very good form. And they have just a number of players up and down the squad. And as I said, some guys that might be in the squad that are not coming because they're going to the Olympics later this summer.
Chris, I have to admit that outside of Cuadrado, not Cuadrado, the Mexican, outside of Cuadrado and obviously James, this team is filled with players that I don't recognize, but that's mostly because I have a very Eurocentric focus in terms of the football I watch. So talk to me about some of these other players. Highlight for me and our listeners who might be like me and might be Eurocentric, some of the players that will take this Copa by storm.
Well, I think you've talked about being Eurocentric. Carlos Bacca is someone who is in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, again, it's been interesting to watch because I was quite fortunate to see him play for Club Brugge in person because they played Newcastle in the Europa League. And I must confess, his finishing was poor that evening, but you could certainly see why he was dangerous because he kept putting himself in positions that were difficult to defend. He would find spaces in between centre-backs, in between defenders, little pockets that really only the smartest strikers tend to find. And I think even though he's having a somewhat unstable time at Milan, there's talk he could leave, that should not breed any kind of complacency in his opposition because he will be, I think, as razor-sharp as he usually is.
Mm-hmm.
You've talked about James Rodriguez in there. The other name I keep hearing good things about is Marlos Moreno, the forward at Atlético Nacional. Again, this is a tournament, I think, where players who are playing in South America can actually really benefit themselves and use it as a springboard because while there is a European tournament on, and yes, perhaps with our Eurocentric guys, we think that's where everything is focused, there will be scouts watching Copa America. There will be teams looking at players. And from seeing him, he's someone who's quite versatile, can play forward, can play wide as well. I think this could be a big tournament for him. I think in the absence of some names who are a little bit grander, he could come in and really do something for this Colombian team.
Gabe, talk to me about players that you think will have an impact.
Yeah, I think I'm glad that Chris mentioned Carlos Bacca. I think that, you know, again, in terms of looking for the goals there, obviously James Rodriguez is going to be doing that from midfield. Cuadrado is going to be adding some great width in the attack for Colombia. But the main goal scorer, I think, is going to be Carlos Bacca. And you know, his performance at AC Milan has been kind of inconsistent through the course of the year, but you know he's not going to be a flashy striker, you know. But I think his clinical finishing is really going to come in key here. I mean, overall, I think that, you know, Colombia, a very, very talented squad. But if there's going to be any vulnerabilities, I think it's going to be on the defensive side of things. You're really going to be putting, I think, a lot of pressure on Christian Zapata. Again, another AC Milan player who will probably be one of the main then center backs in this squad. I do like Santiago Arias there at PSV. But really, you know, like we've kind of been mentioned here before, you know, everything's going to be going through their midfield with Cuadrado and Rodriguez. And I think it's, you know, we have to note that when we look at these tournaments, obviously, you know, as important it is in terms of their international team, this is obviously an excellent opportunity for some players to be able to kind of vault then their own club careers, you know, be able to attract new teams and moves. And I have to say, that's probably going to be one thing that Juan Cuadrado is going to really want to take advantage of, kind of in limbo with this loan period from Chelsea at Juventus. Obviously, you've got a new coach then at Chelsea then with Antonio Conte, who should be quite familiar with Cuadrado. So I think this is going to be also an excellent opportunity for him personally to campaign for a stay and also you know, playing time, then a good amount of playing time with the Chelsea club going into next year.
Yeah, I'm sure Jose Mourinho would be looking closely at the Cuadrado situation. totally kidding. Definitely, if you don't know how that played out, basically Cuadrado signed for Chelsea and was immediately thrown on the Mourinho's bus, pun intended. Mourinho pretended that he didn't want to sign him and never played him and sent him on loan. So, all right, guys, let's move to Paraguay. Karthik, the best way to start this conversation is to inform our listeners that most of the players on this team are very inexperienced. 12 out of 20 outfield players have less than 15 caps on this Paraguayan squad. And the one that I think we'll spend some time talking about is Juan Iturbe. So talk to me about this Paraguay team.
Yeah, they have some experienced players. Most of the team is very young, as you mentioned, Nipun. But Pablo Aguilar is a player I like a lot that I've watched for years in Mexico. He's coming off a good season with America. Just recently got knocked out of the Mexican Clausura playoffs. Edgar Benitez up front, a player I've watched a lot of, mostly during his time at Pachuca, but he's also was very influential for Toluca for a couple of seasons, still playing in Mexico. He's a good striker. And of course, you've got Paulo da Silva still in the team, and he plays for Toluca now. I'm not quite sure he's going to play that much, but he's now 36 years of age. And Valdez, who is playing here in MLS with Seattle, a top player for years for Paraguay, came to Seattle last season after spending half a season at Eintracht, winding down his European career. Former Borussia Dortmund player, best known for his time at Werder Bremen and Borussia Dortmund. But he's now 33 or 34. So you've got some very old players in this team and very young players and not really that many guys in their prime. So that's right. That's a big concern.
And Chris, this is perfect. Leads into the next question I was going to ask, which is that right now the Paraguayan team is missing a Roque Santa Cruz. It's missing a Chilaver, who was a total character, as we all know. It's even missing someone like Diego Gavilan, someone you would know who played for Newcastle. So it's a team in transition and a team that's rebuilding, if such a thing exists for a national team. So how far do you see this Paraguayan team going?
I think in a lot of ways you can almost hang its hats on Antonio Sanabria, the striker who's been on loan at Sporting Gijón this season from Roma. He's been very strong for them. I think he's got a 1-2 record, give or take, for Sporting. So it's a big ask for someone like that to come in and replace Roque Santa Cruz, who, again, he's 34. There's some cross-country travel in there. That would not be easy on someone right. like him. So Sanabria is younger, doesn't have the experience. I think he's got less than 10 caps, in fact. Still even to score his first goal for Paraguay, which is something to consider. That is a lot of pressure on there. You would think perhaps that Nelson Valdez can kind of coach him through that and use his experience, given that he's the oldest of the strikers they've selected. I just think that he could be a real breakout star of this. This, for me, he's the kind of player that comes into this tournament and, you know, you frame the whole Paraguay debate around there's not a great deal of experience in that forward line in terms of goals. You know, only Valdez has double figures for them, and even that's in 75 caps. That's when something like this happens, and San Cabrera comes out and just, much like Milan Baros in the Euros many years ago, just hits form at the right time and really takes the tournament by storm.
Mm.
But Gabe, it's a big ask, I think, for a man that young.
Yeah. So, Gabe, let's switch to talking about the main team here that we want to discuss with the U.S. men's national team. And we'll talk about tactics and we'll talk about the manager, Klinsmann. But let's start with the person that's taken all of us by storm, and that's Christian Pulisic. You follow, you watch Dortmund play week in, week out. We do as well. And he has had a good season with Dortmund, a good first season. But the things he's doing with the national team right now are pretty awesome. His finish for the third, was it the third or the fourth goal against Bolivia?
Fourth goal
was a very, very neat, tidy finish. So how good is this guy? Are we in danger of overhyping another footballer, or is this guy the real deal?
Well, aren't we always in danger of that as U.S. fans? I think we always just crave for that opportunity to have a player who's really not only going to bring, I think, stardom, to the U.S. squad, be able to reach feats that the U.S. national squad as a whole hasn't been able to reach in international tournaments. But beyond that, really be the face of U.S. soccer to help then soccer get into more homes, more places than that right now don't see this as a major sport in the same way as they look at basketball or the NFL. And so those categories. And so, we've been looking at that ever since, Freddie Adu was categorized then as the next big thing. I think it's always been easy for U.S. fans to really look for that next player to dub it. All that being said, I think that there is certainly a lot of quality and talent in this player. And when you look and factor in that, I think in terms of where his career is at this gentle age of 17 years old, and already then having not only significant playing time, but also some starts then for Borussia Dortmund, to play in front of the yellow wall, to actually have in the pressure of playing for a European club like that, it can only help him. I think that removes then some of this pressure in the limelight that I think players like Freddie Adu and others kind of succumb to. From everything that I've read, he's got a great head on his shoulders. He's being managed well by Thomas Tuchel then at Borussia Dortmund, and not necessarily putting him directly in the front lines at all times. I think it's probably a bigger credit to him that he is at a club like Borussia Dortmund, to where there are so many other players that are going to really kind of attract the spotlight. And I think that allows for him to be able to go under the radar, when it comes to Europe. And then when he comes back home to the United States, obviously all this focus on him. Again, I think he's going to be able to do well in this tournament. We were a little bit, curious as to, whether or not he was going to be playing for the Olympic squad or for Copa America. Obviously, he's been listed now in the Copa America lineup. There's so much youth in this team as well that I think that's only going to help him to be able to build chemistry and really form a relationship with some of these players that hopefully we'll see, playing in many future tournaments together.
Karthik, I have to ask you about this because, as always, you had a very interesting tweet, and I thought it was very thought-provoking, where you asked how many top-level teams would have a 17-year-old starting week in, week out, in terms of, not week in, I guess, game in, game out in terms of the U.S. men's national team. And as always, soccer Twitter jumped on you for it, basically asking you a million questions about MLS and NASL and ProRel and all that stuff. So expand on that a little bit. I thought it was a very good point, and it was misconstrued, obviously, on Twitter, as often is. But it's worth noticing that the U.S. men's national team, a team that was ranked seventh not so long ago, now has a 17-year-old who is the next big thing in its football development.
Yeah, Nipun, the Pulisic inclusion to me is a logical one because he is one of the best American players right now. He's playing at the club level at Borussia Dortmund, one of the top clubs in Europe. The point I was trying to make, which I think went over the heads of 95% of people who responded to me, misinterpreted my tweet, was in no other major soccer-playing nation would the inclusion of a 17-year-old who has one international cap, which was a cameo lead in a 4-0 qualifying game against Guatemala in Columbus, and has played very little at the youth level, youth national team level. The inclusion of a 17-year-old in a major tournament brings so little controversy or so little discussion, which I think is a statement of how where we are in our player pool and how desperate we are for success and how desperate we are for that American that we've gone through Bobby Convy and Santino Quaranta and Freddie Adu and on and on and on. Juan Agudelo, Jose Altidore, all these guys that at a very young age were hyped, and some had decent pro careers, some had useless pro careers. Like Charles Rankin's an example of a guy that was hyped at 13 or 14 and hasn't had a very good pro career. So we're always hyping the next big thing, as Gabe said, and I was just struck that there wasn't that much discussion or controversy about this inclusion. That having been said, Pulisic is on the fringe of starting for this team. He's that good, and the player pool in wide positions is that weak. Although I think the U.S. is very strong in some other positions, and I'm sure we'll get to that in a few minutes.
Chris, the big talking point, of course, is Klinsmann. You've been covering American soccer a ton for The Guardian and 442 and pretty much every respectable writing or journalistic organization. So talk to me a little bit about your views on Klinsmann, because I'd love to hear it.
I don't think he's questioned enough.
He's not enough, is that what you said?
I think far too often his answers are accepted and written down rather than follow-up questions and just general sort of pushing on his answers to things.
Well, why is that? It's not that he's very charismatic. It's not that he is abrasive with the media either, like Louis van Gaal. So why does he get away with it?
Well, I think he is kind of abrasive with the media, but go ahead, Chris.
I think a good reason is it's the American sports culture in the sense that, and I say this again, I have a small sample size of press conferences that I've been in the States, and some of them have been MLS games once or twice with the U.S. men's national team. And so often someone will ask a question and accept the answer that is given, even if the answer does not necessarily seem correct or fitting with the facts. And there is a journalist whose name is escaping me, which is terrible because I've met him, who recently had an exchange with Patrick Vieira that many people deemed quite scandalous, in the sense that he questioned his recounting of the game, his being Vieira, saying that they created chances. And we were talking to him, and I said that it's funny that people think this is quite, because actually in Europe it's quite normal to do that, to question a coach that way. I'm not sure if it's the same in the US. Now, that's just my opinion, admittedly, based on a small sample size. And the thing I think with him is he's promised so much to the US, and the fact that he is coach and technical director, I find such a really confusing conflict of interest, because on the one hand, you are your own boss in that sense. And it also seems like an awfully lot to give one man in terms of dictating not just the present, but also the future of the nation's football. And how does he realistically manage a national team and then also look at all of the youth national teams, the pools below that, that then feed into the youth national teams? It is a huge amount of work. And my concern is when I watch the US national team, and to be fair, I have colleagues in Europe who ask me how the US play. Mm-hmm. I often say, I don't really know, because the truth is they don't have a defined style. And this is the thing. This was what was promised in a lot of ways, was that the US would gain a style, and they haven't. I think they've gained traits, certainly. They're quick transitions. They want to use pace in wide areas. People like DeAndre Yedlin are shifted up and down the right side depending on the game. That is one trait of what should be a bigger plan. And the fact that realistically there isn't a harmony tactically between the senior national team, the U23s, the U20s, et cetera, that at this stage in the Klinsmann life cycle is quite a big concern to me, I must admit.
And I, let me just jump in here for a second. I agree with everything Chris just said. And the very first thing Jurgen Klinsmann promised us in 2011, 5 years ago when he got the job, was there there would be that syncing. There would be that harmony between the senior team, the U23 team, the U17 team. There would be a technical direction. There would be a stylistic consideration in how each of these teams played. We're 5 years into his tenure. I don't know if there's another coach at a club or a national team that would have kept his job as long as he has, having made the promises he's made, having failed to deliver on those promises, and consistently being abrasive when he's challenged on metrics that he in fact created. So the point Chris made about the style and the lack of continuity through the entire program is so important, because that is the very first thing he promised in July of 2011 when he got this job.
So Gabe, let me pose the counter argument to what Chris, and maybe not the counter argument, but what's possible, another way to look at this. So when Klinsmann takes over, obviously he's working with a bunch of players that have already been exposed to X style of football or have X identity, whatever that X is, right? And to be honest, outside of maybe Michael Bradley, who I think is very good, a lot of them are, to be honest, crap, for lack of a better word. So when he has to install this new style of football that the U.S. doesn't have, a new style of football, a new identity that they've never had, obviously it's going to take some time. And possibly the likes of Zardes, the likes of Pulisic, the likes of Nagby are a result of the things that Klinsmann has put into place. Is that a possible argument, or is he just getting lucky with these players coming through?
I think it's certainly some give and take. I think, you know, Jurgen has I think been able to save his U.S. Manager's career in international tournaments just like this, and like Copa America. I mean, we saw that, I think, in terms of leading up to the events themselves, like looking at leading up into the World Cup then. Last year, you know, there would be some stumbling blocks, and you'd start having the focus right on Jurgen Klinsmann. You'd have then some of the same conversations brought up about playing players out of position, about this lack of identity. And I think it comes down to whenever the pressure is really on, you know, Klinsmann will pretty much throw out any game plans that he do to make sure that he gets the result. And even if that necessarily goes against the grain of the style of play that he was hoping to play leading into that particular tournament. So I see a lot of similarities, you know, with the recent struggles the USA had in terms of outright qualification for the 2018 World Cup. You know, some questions being asked there. All of a sudden you get Copa America. You've got a good run in, at least in the past couple, especially the friendlies here that we've seen, to where, you know, the spotlight all of a sudden changes. And I think that once we see, you know, how USA does in this Copa America tournament, because it really can be a live or die type moment for Jurgen in his current position, because while there are certainly some very talented, more talented teams than the U.S. in this particular tournament, when you look at the likes of Argentina, Colombia, Uruguay, you can even throw Brazil's B squad in there to a certain extent. You know, there may not be expectations that USA is going to win it, but I think if you have any kind of struggle through the group stage, especially in Group A, to where they should be comfortable in getting out of that, I think all of a sudden that focus, you know, comes back to the point of everything that we've always seen with Jurgen Klinsmann. He may not find a way of getting escape out of it.
Karthik, the standout players for the U.S. men's national team in the outfield, other than Pulisic, of course, are Michael Bradley and of course, Clint Dempsey. Talk to me about the goalkeeping position. In the World Cup in 2014, we learned how good of a goalkeeper Tim Howard can be. I know things didn't go as well after that at Everton, but we are now at a situation where he is the backup goalkeeper. Guzan has taken over as first choice goalkeeper. Are we losing something with Tim Howard not being in goal, or are we in safe hands, quote unquote, with Brad Guzan?
Well, I guess as safe as you can be with those two keepers. I mean, mm-hmm. certainly we're entering a dip in the U.S.'s. I think the U.S. right now probably has its strongest set of outfield players since the 2003, 2004, 2005 time period, mm-hmm. the time period leading into the 2006 World Cup.
When Freddie Adu made his debut, right, yeah.
Well, yeah, he actually did, actually at the youth level at the time. But no, a strongest set of outfield players since, I would say, the 2006 World Cup. But goalkeeper position, this is the weakest the United States has been in the modern era. Guzan's coming off a season where he got benched twice at Aston Villa in favor of Mark Bunn. That having been said, Guzan had been so important in keeping Villa in the league the previous few seasons. And then Timmy Howard, we've talked about, Napoon, you and I have talked about it week in and week out with Everton, how poor he's been now seasons there, finally giving way to Joel Robles as a starter there. I think Guzan's the right decision. I think Klinsmann's made the right decision on this one. I just don't think the goalkeeper position is necessarily safe, which is why the back line in front of Guzan is going to be very important. And if you look on paper, the United States has about as strong a back line as we've had since the days when Eddie Pope was playing in central defense. So that back line is going to be doubly important because the keeper position is kind of shaky right now.
Chris, what are the positions outside of goalkeeper, as we talked about that, other teams will be looking to highlight? What are the weak areas on this U.S. team?
To me, that's a difficult question because in the same way that there are, to me at least, there are no glaring weaknesses, perhaps bar left back, I don't think there are any huge glaring
strengths. Well, we don't have a left back, right?
Either. It's, right. Yeah, in many ways, it is much of a muchness, the U.S. squad at this precise moment. For me, though, as I touched on there, I think the left-back issue is a sizable one. That's the problem, because there isn't a natural one in there. Mm-hmm. You're going to maybe put Edgar Castillo in there, who I've not been that impressed with personally when I've seen him play. You could shift DeAndre Yedlin over there if you were desperate. Again, whenever I've seen him play left-back, it just doesn't look pretty. He is very right-footed in that sense and not the kind of player that can transition. Like, for example, Philipp Lahm famously did. Davide Santon is another one who's moved over to play on the side that's not with his strongest foot. So for me, I think teams will go with the left-back, but even then that makes it sound as if, you know, that's the weakness. In general, the defence, I think, is going to come up for some real strong tests in this because I think they're solid enough in the air. I don't have any concerns with the US men's national team defending things aerially. Little tricky strikers, small centre of gravity kind of guys, as you know, Alexi Lalas said that he used to struggle with. I think this generation have a similar problem. You put them up against someone who's small, quick, technical, I think you'll see some issues start to flare up.
The good news is that there are players like Suarez, Aguero, and Messi in this competition. So.
Yeah.
Chris, how far do you see this team going in this competition? Group stage, quarterfinal, semifinal, final, winning?
Well, this is the thing. Klinsmann said that, I think he said the semifinal is what they have to aim for.
Right. But how far do you see them?
Finish.
How far do you see them going?
I think they go to the quarterfinals, personally. That's as far as I see them going.
By the way, as for a plug, you should read Chris's article in The Guardian about the U.S.'s 3-0 win over Argentina, a game I actually have on tape. Mm-hmm. Brilliant article. That was what propelled the U.S. to a semifinal run in 1995.
Oh, well done. Chris, you got a free plug. Works out perfectly. Gabe, how far do you see this team going?
Yeah, I have to agree with Chris. I think quarterfinals. I mean, certainly what they do in the group stage, if they were somehow to jump over Colombia and get the first seed coming out of the group, that would certainly help in their positioning then through the elimination rounds. But there's, like I said, there's some talented squads here in this tournament that, and again, some squads that USA's not used to playing, you know, that often with the cotton ball. So I think it's going to be a struggle once we get into the knockout rounds.
Karthik?
Yeah, I think on paper the US is at home. They have a strong enough squad to get to the finals of this tournament. But I think the coaching issues, I think being in a group with Colombia. Look, I don't want to get too deep into it. Get into it when we preview the game. I don't think Klinsmann's a good coach. I don't think he's the right coach for this national team. But I think that there are significant technical issues and kind of tactical issues that the coach hasn't addressed, which will prevent the U.S. from fulfilling their potential in this tournament. I tend to agree with the rest of the group, finish second in the group, probably get knocked out in the quarterfinals. There is the potential, though, to win this group and get all the way to the finals and lose to Argentina, who we're assuming are going to win it. I guess I've already teased who I'm picking in that final.
So we are not done with U.S. Men's National Team chat. We will be talking about them again on Wednesday's podcast as well as Thursday's podcast, previewing, gearing up for that Friday kickoff game. So until then, let me really quickly say that we will be joining you every night. So make sure you stay subscribed to the Eurocopa podcast feed, previously World Soccer Talk, now Eurocopa for this summer. Chris, Gabe, myself will be joining you tomorrow to preview Group B and Group C, in which we'll talk about the likes of Brazil, Ecuador, Mexico, and Uruguay. So join us then. And until then, on the behalf of Chris Henage, Gabe Smith, myself, Nipun Chopra, Karthik.
Enjoy your football.